By 2030, there will be two types of companies, those who successfully adopt AI and those who don't exist anymore.
You have a plane and you are the pilot. Just because the plane gets a lot better, you will still need a pilot.
And that is a huge competitive advantage because other companies then don't work like that.
What makes companies successful? I think there is one aspect.
The Boardroom Memo, powered by Netconomy.
Welcome to the Boardroom Memo. This is episode 1, entering the new agentic age. In this episode, the CEO of Netconomy, Martin Botzauna, and the COO of Netconomy, Martin Wachler, unpack what agentic AI really is, why the gap between leaders and laggards is widening, and what leaders need to do now to be on the right side of that divide. So let's hop into it.
I've very often been in a situation where I thought that's the most interesting time of my business life. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely the most interesting time of my business life because for the first time, computers can do something which only humans could do in the past. And I think that's the fundamental change. We don't know yet where it will lead us to. And we are just scratching the surface. But I agree, we can already see so much gain. In the end, it always requires common sense and some logical thinking to make the most out of that. I can recall that we had a couple of points in time where, like, first there was content management, then there was e-commerce, then there was omnichannel, where everybody was expecting that things will fundamentally change overnight, which never happened, and it doesn't happen because people need time to adapt. And I think that's equally true for AI. In some cases, AI is capable of doing much more than we humans, and that also affects us every day in the economy. Can you imagine?
Mm. What is, when you look back, what is the point in time or the first thing that you remember when you noticed yourself that it will change or how AI will change something?
I mean, I can recall that everybody was talking about ChatGPT and I had no clue what they are talking about. And then I tried it out and suddenly the machine did something which I could not even explain to myself. Mm. But that was also the point in time where I saw that there is huge potential in there. And it's not so much about what this thing can generate. It's more like what you can do with that in a business perspective. And that is this kind of rational, logical thinking, which is biased because every model is biased, but it in a lot of dimensions can do boring stuff that humans should not do in a way where it's not more biased than humans are. Mm-hmm. And I think that was quite early. And there was a lot of hype because humans are interesting. The majority thought that chatting with an AI that just generates text will change everything, which there is no reason to believe that this happens. Mm. But from there, I think you can already, and that's also, I think, the strengths within the economy. We are doing this now for such a long time, and we have always been at the edge of technology that we can already recognize a couple of patterns that are necessary to make things really meaningful and useful. And we can also predict that on the AI side. So from my perspective, there's, of course, AI that you have embedded into products. Then there is this personal productivity topic, which is now emerging when you look into Claude Cowork and gems in Gemini and custom GPTs in ChatGPT, where you adapt the thing to help you do your stuff better and ever more connected. But I think the biggest potential going forward is when you have processes that autonomously run and just interact with humans where it really matters, so that you can focus the human labor to creating real value. When I look into customers' organizations nowadays, there is a lot of labor fenced into processes that should not and don't have to be done by humans, but they lack the capacity on other levels where you really contribute to making customers happy, doing things that help evolve the strategy, generate new revenue, and so on.
For me, so when this originally ChatGPT was launched, I was very skeptical because I have been following what is going on in AI, or back then it was called, people called it machine learning, for a long time. And I was quite skeptical if this hype that then originated really was justified. And originally I used it as everyone, you know, for example, I always helped my daughter learn for math exams, and I used ChatGPT to check the results. And, you know, 50% of the time it was correct, 50% of the time not. And then sometimes, you know, it gave you answers that you thought, wow, that's really impressive. And I switched from very skeptical to, wow, everything will be completely different. And then two or three times back and forth. But now for me, last April, so April 2035, I think is when I first used agentic coding tools, Claude Code and Gemini CLI then. And that for me was really the eye-opener. How the models and the technology is used, how it's embedded in a workflow is really extremely important and can change a lot on what the effects are. And so that for me was really the eye-opener. Okay, this is really relevant, and I have to invest a lot of personal time to really understand what's going on and to also adapt my mindset and workflow to these new possibilities. And as far as hype is concerned, I think it's really important not to be too skeptical, but also not to be too hyped and think, wow, tomorrow everything will be different. No humans will be needed anymore for anything. It's a bit also like the internet bubble, you know, in the 2000s. There was a lot of hype and it was, valuations were overblown and everything. But in the end, when the stock market, you know, recovered a bit, you could see there's a lot of value there and a lot of things obviously worked. And this will be the same on another scale. So for sure, there will be some things that pop, bubble, whatever you want to call it. But there is some real value there you can see, and some things that will stay and will completely change how business works. This is my belief now. Yeah.
Yeah. I think what you say is super interesting, because there are some, we can already recognize that there are some principles that we can trust are true. One is that it will never go as fast as predicted by those who say that's totally disruptive, simply because companies, people need time to adapt. And the other thing is that a lot of that impact in adoption is more in the mind of the people that are affected and not so much in the technology. So I can recall a couple of conversations that I had with senior engineers here in economy who explained me that their code is better than what the coding agent can create, which is true. Just the coding agent can correct its mistakes 100 times faster than any human could do that. And also those models are massively evolving. But what is always necessary is that you need engineering skills. And I think the founder of OpenClaw explained that quite well, where he said he found out that he doesn't have to write a lot of code, but still the engineering skills that are necessary to solve a complex problem that also has an effect on business, they are equally the same. And that's also what I believe is super important for us and our customers, that we build and extend the ability to understand the vision, the business model, the challenges, and then try to support that with a smart solution which is driven by engineering principles, but really gets to the point. And therefore, it's not necessary that you write all the code on your own, but you need to understand technology so that you can pull together stuff. And that's, I think, that's the biggest opportunity.
Yeah, so this is exactly where you have to understand, as a programmer or also as maybe a business person using the AI tools, you have to understand the context. You have to understand, have to be really skilled in how to interact with the system, because that makes a huge difference. I think a good analogy for that is, let's say, you have a plane and you are the pilot. Just because the plane gets a lot better, you will still need a pilot. We are not, you know, I think the industry is not trying to get rid of the pilot, but actually make a better plane, which maybe is faster, which maybe can transport more cargo or some easy routes, maybe fly on its own, but you will still need someone to pilot the plane, or maybe, you know, orchestrate different planes and so on. So these skills and the technical know-how is still needed, and maybe even more. And the understanding how all of those things interact and the systems work, this is even more important, I think, than it was in the past. Just the actual how the plane flies, and in our case, how the software is then just typed, this is maybe not as important anymore in the future as it was until now.
I think we can see that with a lot of customer scenarios where we started building agents, and their going in position was often that they already had agents built in a POC where it was not consciously defined what is the scope and the purpose. It was more a tech demo than really something which is beneficial for the business. And then you just fall into a hole after technically it works, but nobody's using it because it's doing something which doesn't have much of a value. And that's also where I see our organization really growing in understanding the customer's need and then come up with a technical solution that really contributes value. So we, in the future, it will be even more important to deeply understand technology and what's possible and where are the limits, but also understand the business aspect and really come up with the best solution where you create value. And what very often comes to my mind was the statement that the Google CTO said to us in an audience when we were there in Sunnyvale 4 months ago, which I felt a bit harsh, but obviously there is something in it, which says by 2030 there will be two types of companies, those who successfully adopt AI and those who don't exist anymore. And I think that is addressing a super important aspect, the productivity gain. If you manage to map what's possible with technology, especially in the agentic field, with your processes and your business model as a company, will have a huge impact on your competitive advantage on the market. And it's not doubling it, it's tenfolding.
But I think this has always been the case somehow. You have to be competitive and to survive as a company. You have to optimize your processes. You have to understand your processes. You have to, you know how things work. And this is exactly the same now, just as you say, not maybe it's not a factor of two, but a factor of 10 or 100. And the difference now is that if you do not understand your processes and you do not understand how your business actually works and how, you know, you do not understand your customers really deeply, others will, and they will be not two times, but 100 times better. And this is the difference now. I think the actual underlying mechanics and way that business works in this area is maybe not changing, but just the effects are really multiplying a lot because AI is such a multiplying factor.
Let's look a little bit into the overall mindset that we have towards AI. When we are sometimes in the US, in Silicon Valley, we see that the mindset there is, how can we solve problems with that technology? What can be the benefit? How can we create new stuff? And in Europe, it is often, and we see that even within our company, everybody starts to be a lawyer. What could be the reason why I can't do this or that? And this can become a huge threat, which we need to overcome, because when you have agents doing stuff for you within the company, you also need to dare let them do things that only humans did, which also make mistakes, and where you in the end also as a company are fully liable for what they do. But this mindset shift is something which I think is super important for us to address and also help educate our customers to get things done and allow stuff to happen and not find reasons why you defer it. How do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not the one or the other approach, but you have to find a good balance. It's not, you know, just do anything and let the AI make all the decisions and do everything without checks. Give access to all the data. It doesn't matter which data, all the machine. That's not the right solution. On the other hand, locking everything down and not daring to do anything because you are afraid someone might say that's not allowed. It's also not the right way. So I think as a company, you have to define the boundaries. You have to really be careful about which data you give to which system, not only AI, but also to in every other technology, who can see what. So the basics you have to get right. And then very important is to have a mindset of curiosity in people and of experimentation, because top down mandated, you know, this is how we use AI. This I think that will not work. People have to find out themselves how to, and you have to give them, let's say, a safe playground to be able to do that without having to think themselves, oh, what could happen?
Yeah. I think that's also a huge opportunity for Europe, because we understand that some kind of rules are necessary. And if we balance that out, that on the long run can be much more beneficial than just let everything happen and then later manage the damage that was foreseeable. You mentioned data. Let's talk a little bit about data. I think data will be, or when we look into our customers' structure, everybody has a data lake, but still the data in there is not holistic. It is not always accurate. Semantics are missing. So what's your view on the importance of data going forward?
It's the same as before, as I said, with the processes. You have to have an understanding of which data you have and how the different levels of importance, and the more important and the more basic the type of data is for you as a business, for example, you know, financial data that has to be correct and has to be right. You cannot send an invoice to the customer or give a tax based on taxes which are about right. That has to be right, and you have to have that really under control and managed properly. On the other hand, there may be some operational data, some usage data, analytics, where it might be okay with if you just see the trend, and you also have to treat that differently. A lot more experimentation can go on there. You can, you know, have some human interpretation and so on. So I think this having a different levels of granularity and different levels of how the company manages the data, from very strict to very open, that's very important. And people, referring back to before, have to understand which is which. You have to give the right access rules, and that's basically has always been like that and gets more important with having AI models giving access to that. It's the same if you have, let's say, you have some agents, you give access to the data. You might first want to try only with this, let's say, not so business critical things where not everything can go wrong, and make sure that, you know, maybe you simulate before and you have a basic understanding of what is the framework and the boundaries of what can happen before you really, you know, give access to everything.
Technology also helped a lot, I think, with that, because there was in the past always the attempt to have this centralized data lake where you put all the data in one place, which creates a massive latency problem and a huge complexity when it comes to integration. And what we also see on the market with a lot of customers is that they start building some kind of federated data environment where you can have zero copy integration, so you don't have to replicate the data. You just connect it and analyze it holistically, which is a super important basis for an agentic layer. And when looking into our ecosystem partners, especially SAP and Google, that's I think a smart move that they are making, that they bring together the data within their ecosystem in one place, and then you just connect the, let's say, the data lakes, in the lack of a better terminology, but because data lake is also somehow outdated, I have no better terminology, but I think it's a bit more, and you can have a holistic real-time view on your entire landscape, which is important. And when I look into what makes companies successful, I think there is one aspect which is very underestimated, but where agentic AI can have a huge impact, which is the organizational latency that you have. So sometimes, and we see that even within the economy, when we make a decision, it takes weeks to be implemented, just because humans are interacting with humans, and those humans then are interacting with other humans. You can write a rule there, but it needs time to adapt. But when you have a overarching process which is supported by an agent, that agent in the next second can implement changes, and the organization is then automatically using it in this new way. And that is a huge competitive advantage, because other companies then don't work like that. Adapting to situations that change takes them weeks and months.
Mm. I think this is what I meant before. I can give an example. Let's say you want to find out why a feature is taking longer than you expected from the data that you have. In the past, usually you have, you know, some, as you said, some data lake or some operational data. Someone builds a dashboard. You have to give it maybe to some separate department to do all of this analysis. But if you rethink what is possible now with Gemini or any other model, or, you know, Claude Code, for example, I did that just myself. You don't even need to understand how the data is structured. You don't even need to understand how the data is stored. You just can say, look, please analyze the database. This is the team, this is the feature that they are building. I want to understand why it takes longer than initially expected. And it really, you know, can help you find out, maybe not exactly, but a trend. But I would never do that, for example, when I say, okay, why, as I said before, with some really core financial data. So some things have to stay really controlled, but some things you should have a mindset of a lot more is possible now without all the effort and all the maybe organizational boundaries and so on.
That brings me to another topic where we had the discussion yesterday a little bit. Increasing the productivity of a company requires probably two complementary strategies. One is to define a technology stack, and also it's more than a technology stack, a foundation where AI and process automation can happen, which provides that kind of semantics that you were addressing, and the tool set with which you can implement such stuff. And then it also requires a mindset where the people in the company understand that it's not just some guys in the IT building something and you have to specify it and wait for a long time to get something. When you specify it, you can also, within certain boundaries, already build it yourself, at least to a level where you have some kind of a prototype, right, where a centralized team can then take it over and get it to the enterprise level. But on a department level, you can do a lot of stuff to increase productivity. May it be building some kind of analytics or insights or apps, like you just explained, or even agentic processes that are relevant within that department. And then we are back at the cultural thing, where the organization needs to understand. You need to give them the tools, but you also need to give them the clear goal and the expectation. And that's also what we did in the economy when we said, from 2026 on, in the performance management for every employee, we start measuring AI-driven impact. We don't know yet how exactly we do that, but at least I can ask a couple of questions. What did you do with the tooling that we provide you to increase productivity? Mm. I think this organizational and this mindset shift is even more important than technology. Mm. That will
And this also leads me to the thought, when also in the economy, but of course everywhere else, people are thinking, oh, when or will AI at some point take my job? And I think this is the completely wrong way to think about it. What will for sure be important is that you learn how to use if you say that's a tool, how to use the tools. It's for sure more likely that someone who can use tools better will take your job, and not your job will go away. So it's really important for everyone in the economy, or in and also in our other companies, to really skill up and learn how to use the tools. It might not be clear now, and it might not be the way that it works in, I don't know, 2 years, but you have to follow it, you have to keep up. Otherwise, once this new model really emerges and there's some kind of, let's say, agreement or point where everything converges to how to use that, you have to be ready to you know, have to be skilled. Otherwise, this is why you would be left behind.
Yeah. I think there's also a lot of positive aspect in what you just said, because it relieves people from doing stuff that humans should not do, because the machine can do it for you. It's a bit, if you think back into the time of the Industrial Revolution and the invention of the steam machine, I guess the guys there also thought the world will go under, and we don't know how all that will happen, because nobody will have work. But it led to the biggest growth in history. Not so good for the planet, by the way. But I think from an economic perspective, that was absolutely unleashing all the powers, and the same potential I see also in AI. It's the creativity of humans that defines what should happen and what is the direction. And I see by myself, I can do stuff on my own, either by making up my mind about something or building some applications, at least, that where you can convey the idea or show a prototype. That was never possible in the past. So the way creative humans can make impact just massively expanded. And there are so many good aspects also when I see that in private life. When you search for medical advice, your wife is a doctor, so you have direct first-hand access, but not everybody has that. And I know a lot of people who educate themselves much more, that helps them assess the situation correctly. And you are not dependent on a single person. Their mood and their experience and knowledge to get a single feedback on a super important topic. There is so much positive upside there, which is interesting. And when I think about the thing in life that I hate the most is doing the grocery shopping, because that's just a waste of time, and I still haven't figured out how the supermarket organizes the stuff. I often have to ask for things. Going forward, agentic commerce and so on, what's your view on that?
My view on agentic commerce, if you define it in a way that you shop not, let's say, yourself in an online shop or over an app, but over an agent, you search for products via an agent and so on. My view at the moment is that this will be very relevant for, as you said, maybe groceries or things where you don't need that much inspiration, you know, like everyday items or maybe I prolong my service contract for whatever, which is boring and no one wants to do that. For these things, 100% agentic commerce will be, and people will do that a lot using agents. But I think what will not go away is this inspirational thing where people really like, I don't understand why, because I hate it, but people really like to either go in a physical store or, you know, go online and for hours just look through things and get inspired what they could buy. So this aspect, I think, will not go away, and this will maybe be a bit changed, and you can do it quicker and find better fitting products, more personalization and so on, using AI tools. But I don't think that the main shopping channel in the future will be, I just say to my agent, I buy me some cool Nike shoes and it will do it. I still want to see it myself and find out what and browse for myself. I think this is my view at the moment.
I believe you're right. I mean, we see on the market that the big ecosystems are trying out different things, with OpenAI being the first one with their ACP protocol, which I personally believe is very problematic, because for a merchant, you are just abstracted behind ChatGPT and you don't own the transaction. You're barely visible, and it's about the product, its availability and the price. And that's it. Where I find Google's UCP approach much smarter. I can imagine that for research, that has a huge impact to make the final decision. I might go on site and do it there. But the amazing thing in all that is that the technology is now available and will be distributed broadly soon, where I can build my own agent that does the stuff for me that is costing me a lot of time by just taking a picture from the fridge and tell it to replenish what I need. Of course, I would not buy a sofa with that. That needs a more conscious decision. And we both know that we are not the decision makers with such purchases.
Yeah. I mean, that also might be completely wrong. And, newer generation, younger people who grow up with this, then do it completely differently. But at least I can never imagine that I buy a car or a sofa or, shoes, really without seeing them or having some kind of inspiration journey before. I want to see how the physical things for sure, a car, I want to see how it drives and not just, have an agent configure it in a way that I like it and order it without ever me seeing it before. Yeah. And when you think about the other side, of this transaction, so our customers, what do you think is important? You talk to a lot of customers, you see how customers think and how their companies function. What are your thoughts about how our customers can stay successful and can be winners of this agentic age?
Coming back to this, what a lot of people call the great divide. So companies understand how to adopt AI and how and others who don't. I think our role in that game is that we help our customers make the right decisions and have the right perspective. What I see is that since there is so much capital behind this AI bubble, it's difficult for business decision makers to make the right decision because you get totally biased. So perhaps we can in a minute also look a bit into how do we look at the different ecosystems behind. I think that it's very important to have this, let's say, top-down perspective on technology and the evolution and things that are possible, but also have a very grounded, down-to-earth, bottom-up view on what's possible and what really brings value, because it's easy to sink millions in AI initiatives with zero value. I believe that we have to provide the necessary foundation to make the right decisions for our customers and help them adopt and learn so that they can control their AI direction by themselves. I see a lot of very smart, very educated people in our customers' organizations, but it's difficult for them because they usually get approached by all the different players on the market and everybody is selling them the even better stuff. So it's difficult to figure out what works and what is just a story. And a lot of that is sometimes just a story. And from that also extract what is the strategically right path to go, because your investments need to be strategic. So the investment in 2026 need to build the foundation for 2027 and so on. And you cannot simply replace and change course completely. When looking into this agentic potential which is there, from a business perspective, there is a lot in the interface to the customer, to the market, because there is on the one hand side huge effort in marketing, sales, service, whatever. And on the other hand, there is also huge frustration, because if you, for example, call the hotline of our beloved main airline carrier in our region here, it's really, I'd rather go to the dentist than calling them. So there is a huge gap and a huge disconnect between what customers expect and what companies deliver. And there, this is definitely one field. The other thing is that you have major ecosystems that cover certain topics, like SAP, for example, covering the core financial process. Let's start with that. And Microsoft covering the office automation stuff, or office workplace. And Google positioning itself on the marketing side. But you need to bring that together somehow and find the best way how that works. So perhaps at that point, let's look into a little bit our view on those ecosystems. I'll let you pick the first one.
Or SAP.
SAP. Yeah. I mean, SAP is, from my perspective, underestimated, because a lot of customers look at SAP as the boring ERP company, and unfortunately SAP in their own communication is not doing much about it. But SAP to me is the only company that can have the core process end-to-end integrated. Like we see there's a lot of research from McKinsey and so on, that one-third of the revenues is directly online or is moving towards that. In all major industries, one third is digitally influenced massively, and another third is traditional. So if that's the case, the integration between the digital layer that interacts with my clients in the digital field and also generates transactions with my process core is super important. So SAP is the only company that can do that end to end. And I absolutely believe that they have also, not only in the backend, but also in the customer experience space, the strongest portfolio, way superior to Salesforce, but they are much better in selling it. But that is just one piece within the landscape of a company, because all those vendors believe that it's only them who are there, but that's not the reality. The reality is that you have a mixture of different ecosystem players. And that's also the challenge when you think about agentic, that it's not just within one ecosystem, it's across them.
And then moving on to next, what about Google?
Google is an interesting company, because they have two strengths. One is technology. They have, from my perspective, the strongest technology portfolio of all hyperscalers by far. And the other thing is that they are super strong in online marketing and analytics. So when you are a consumer brand, there is no way to get around Google. I think it was super healthy for them that OpenAI launched ChatGPT, because that was the first time in their history where they really had to think about what they want to be in the future. And from my perspective, in the past 12 to 15 months, they made little mistakes. And I also think that super complementary to have SAP combined with Google, because you can borrow a lot of technology that you don't have on the SAP side, and you can have all those strong business cores and combine it with Google. So that's a interesting play. And I believe that with the latest moves that Google has done, they created a dead end for OpenAI. That's my personal opinion, because whatever you think about OpenAI could do, it's either Google who will be superior, or another player which is already there. And that business model, I can hardly imagine how they get out of that trap.
And when you put yourself in the shoes of a decision maker in one of our a customer's organization who has to decide, you know, how the system landscape looks like. Do I bet on niche players who solve, you know, very narrow problems perfectly, or do I, on the other hand of the range, on the other side of the range, choose ecosystem and, you know, maybe which cannot solve everything 100% as I need, but 95%. What is your view or what is your thoughts on this, let's say, two sides?
As we are mostly working for large enterprises, which have much more complexity in that aspect. I think the fundamental question is, can I move towards platform or platforms? There might not be one, and I can elaborate on that in a minute. Or can I pull in a lot of specialized solutions, which I can combine in a smart way, and they do everything for me, but they come with a much higher specialization on a certain topic. My belief is that since we can build a lot of stuff on our own, now with the help of AI on top of such a platform, it's becoming very problematic for a lot of SaaS solutions, because their value is substantially shrinking, and they bring a lot of complexity into the game. We see that even within the economy, that if we could find a way to reduce half of them, we would absolutely do that, and we are working on it. But that's a difficult thing. Now, when you look into the platforms, we haven't talked about Microsoft. Microsoft is, from my perspective, way behind in the AI race. I mean, you see that also in the investor calls and so on, that they cannot catch up, and a lot of their AI revenue is in the end just proxied OpenAI revenue. They are no match in the AI game. So when you as a company have to make decisions where to bet on, I think there is SAP with all the core systems that are there anyway, and the SAP AI portfolio has room to grow, let's say it like that, but that's logical, because they simply don't have the heritage and the capacity to lead that topic, which is fine. But I think there is this inner security perimeter where you don't, like you said before, you don't want to have the AI just modify your balance sheet and then hallucinate some numbers in there or so. So that needs to be secured. And I think then it depends on the business model that you have. I think in consumer industries, Google is a super strong player. I am skeptical that OpenAI has a long-term value, because it's too expensive and too less ecosystem. Consumer industries, you always have your consumers connected. I think that Microsoft has a right to play in certain areas, especially in office workplace. But it's frustrating to talk to Copilot because it basically is a better help tool to tell me where to click. That's not what I would expect from an AI. I personally don't believe that 300 plus SaaS solutions will be the solution, because that's creating so much noise and complexity and cost in the end, because all of them are seat-based, that it's always better to have a platform to do more on your own, where you can create a lot of output with reasonable effort meanwhile, but the commercials underneath are not seat-based, because if you have 10 tools which are all seat-based, you have 10 times per seat the cost, and that's simply becoming too expensive. Mm. What's your view?
I share this view, but what I want to add is that maybe the dimension of actually which AI, if it's important, which model you use. I think this is a very interesting aspect that I always believed over the last years, that it's important to have a better and better model, and And there is truth to that, of course. You know, the foundation models get better and they can do a lot more things. But you can see now very clearly that the tooling and the systems which you built outside, agents and how you give these agents the context, how this loop works, the agent does something, sends something to the model, some result gets back, it critiques itself and changes something, and this self-improvement loop. I think this is clear that it gets more into a direction where it's actually more important that those tools, how those tools work, and that they call the models or they use the models in the right way rather than which model you use. So I think this will become more and more of a commodity in the future, and it will just be some fixed cost block which someone gets, but it will not be, decided if you are successful or not, which model you use.
Let's talk about agents a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's also when we talk about agents, I often see that this is not exactly defined what that is. From my perspective, there are agents which are embedded in a software, like SAP does that with Joule, where there are a lot of different agents. And those agents are configurable, predefined, they serve a certain purpose, but they are also open to be approached from outside, from other agents, so the agents can talk to each other. And then there is this layer of, I can create my own agent with a low-code, no-code platform where I have a visual interface and define an agent. But that is the first one is a defined scope. The second one has a limited flexibility, and the heavy lifting needs to go in really this enterprise-grade agent frameworks. And we see that there is a huge competition going on. Microsoft, a couple of months ago, restarted all their agentic initiatives because they figured out that they are not competitive with what they did. Google was late to the party, but did a great job with their agent development kit. So we see that basically they are also modernizing their whole company based on agent development kit, which is really amazing. And we can also achieve a lot of results. But we will see where this leads to, because when you look at features like Claude Cowork, which is also agentic-based, mm-hmm. I mean, that really becomes the kind of wingman for you in the daily business that does stuff while you do other stuff. What's your view on where we stand at that evolution?
Yeah, I think we are. That's a very good point. But I think we are really just at the beginning, and that this is the first family of these agentic tools, or the first wave of these agentic tools which are on the market and which obviously already bring a lot of value. But I think, it's not clear if this is the way that it stays or if how this will look in 5 years. That's what I also meant before. It's very interesting that those tools, those agentic platforms, Claude Code, Gemini CLI, or Claude Cowork, they actually don't really have a lot of new things. They just use tools which are already there and can combine them in a really good way, and then feed the results into a model. The model analyze something, gives back, and you have this improvement loop. And this is really important aspect that. You don't need really to invent something new, but just use what is there, what works in a really smart way. That really, I have to say, that really surprised me and opened my eyes to how what is already possible. But I think we don't know if the, let's say, complete workflow of someone working software development, or someone working in finance, will stay the same or will completely change. But even more important is to really keep up and use these tools so you can you can familiarize yourself and be there with your know-how and your skills when, you know, this next step of this evolution happens.
When we elevate that to the company level, I think one thing we can already see is that we have to build an agentic layer, which consists of individual agents that follow principles like single purpose and so on, mm-hmm. so that you can manage the structure and the architecture across different ecosystems, where you then can start automate really end-to-end processes. And you also need to have something on top where you have this user interface for humans to interact with. Maybe Copilot, I don't see so much, but something like Gemini Enterprise, where you can attach all those agents and this orchestration agents know what to do and how to do that. I think this is something which we can already identify as this is a good investment and everybody has to follow that path. So curious to see what the future brings us.
Yes.